Hey, this is The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille here on WBAI 99.5 FM, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you live a more positively minded life. With us today, Armand and Ben Starr.
Hey, guys.
Hi, this is Armand Starr. It's a nice name. Interesting as we do, as we've been exploring.
We have been, and we had a discussion briefly before the show started, and Armand and I were talking about trust and fear, and I was wondering if there's a certain amount of fear and trust that helps us by protecting us from the outside world, because for me, I've seen a sort of dichotomy between what I consider to be either too much or not enough trust. So I described a situation to Armand where I had arguments with someone that I knew who I told them that I thought, hey, I think you're being a little too trusting. And they said to me that they thought I was being jaded and untrusting. So my question becomes, is there a healthy place? Is there a healthy middle ground for being accepting and open and simultaneously cautious enough to protect ourselves? What do you guys think about that?
Well, let's start with the beginning. First, your question is, you naturally say to someone, you should be a different way than you are. And now that means you have a personal involvement with someone, probably a woman, and you're saying to her, I want you to be more cautious because I want to protect you in some way, or I don't want to have to protect you in some way. So you have an investment in advising her.
It was a her.
Of course, well, how did I guess? And there was a reason to invest in this. There's a reason why you wanted her to be different than she is. Because she would turn herself over innocently, and she would do things like probably give money away.
Yep.
Right? And you would say, I don't want you to do that. Because I, Ben, have watched people suffer that way.
I have. I mean, I think that...
Okay, now wait, just back up a second. So therefore, all judgment that we have almost always comes from a personal experience, even though it sounds like it's a critical judgment. For example, knowing somebody who trusts too much. Do you ever have anybody like that in your life?
I know a few people like that.
Okay. You have anybody in your life who is close to you, who is family, who you would wish would have protected themselves better?
Sure. My dad is one example.
Yeah, good example, right? So you wanted to warn him, don't, dad, don't trust? Or did he just come to you afterwards and say, I trusted too much?
A little bit of both. I mean, I just think that it's like you said earlier, I want to protect the people I care about. I want to protect the people I love and that matter to me. So I want to see them do the best they can to protect themselves.
Okay, now, Ben, imagine you didn't have to protect anybody.
Okay.
Now, imagine, what would it be like if you weren't protecting anybody from themselves?
What would my relationship with them be like?
Yeah, how would it be different?
That's a good question.
Okay, hold up just a sec, okay? I'm going to take that. Julian, you're a protector also.
Yeah.
You're like a guardian angel, you know? You're like one of the most beautiful protectors I know.
Thank you.
Imagine if you didn't have to take care of anyone. Imagine if you weren't tending to anyone. What would that be like?
I'm not sure if it'd be freeing or, like, make me feel like I have no meaning or something like that. I'm not totally sure.
Right. It's a question we have. So here we have in our minds, we are born to be brave and protect, right? Protect and serve. For whose sake? Who are we protecting, and for whose sake are we protecting them? You talked earlier, Ben, about a child and what happens. No, you said about a child who gets overprotected. Some children are overprotected.
Yeah. I think, the excessive nurturing can lead to a fear.
Yes.
Once that nurturing is no longer, constantly provided.
Somebody put down a book about, where we grew up, the Lower East Side of Manhattan. Yeah. Tompkins Square Park has swings. And under those swings, there used to be cement. So when we would go up in the swings, if we fell down, we fell on the cement. That means you cracked your head. It means you hurt your butt. It means you scraped your shoulders.
Scraped your knee.
Yeah, and instead they put rubber.
Yeah, they would put those little rubber black squares.
Now
right?
They have those big rubber squares under there. Now the kids go much further, and now if they fall, it's not as dangerous. Question becomes, what happened to those kids? And in a follow-up, those kids wound up frightened of many, many things. Because falling down and learning where your elbow stops could be helpful, learning your own limits. You set your own fear. So what good does fear do us anyway? Is a question we're going to be asking of you. 212-957-2729, our number here. 212-957-2729. We've got to get a better phone number. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Carmel's got the best one. the jackpot.
212-957-2729. Here's a question. Does fear do you any good? Do you need fear?
Well, I think fear, most fear anyway, is related to this sort of leftover instinctual thing that we've carried with us for many, many generations, many thousands of generations.
Sure. When you're in a tribe, there's going to be one guy who's a hunter. He goes out, he gets the meat, right? And you're going to have another one who's going to stay home and cook it. You're going to have a third guy who's going to paint on the walls to make sure everything looks pretty. And then you're going to have a whole set of people sitting on the outside of the tribe running up warnings whenever they sense...
Right, the watch out.
The watch out. Right.
So the question becomes, fear served us, from an evolutionary perspective,
right,
to get us to where we are today. But is it still necessary in 2015 to carry fear?
Right. Do we have to?
I'd like to hear what our listeners have to say and what you guys think about that.
But. And of course, if you say everybody's going to rationalize a cause, a reason to be afraid. Now, here's a question. Are you afraid? If you're numb, very often you're not afraid. If you don't feel anything, you're not afraid. Interestingly, fear is a feeling. Right? But if you don't feel anything, how could you feel fear? A psychopath doesn't feel fear.
Do depressed people feel a lot of...
good question.
Fear?
Depressed people could depress themselves so much they don't feel it. But then there's a layer underneath that, which is called anxiety depression. And in this state of mind, it's the worst of all. It's like hell. You're frightened and you're depressed. That's horrible. That's a horrible feeling. So you could have both, or you could have none. You could go completely dead, you could be numb, or you could have a lot of anxiety. Any of those are feelings that are not good. Let's take it up a step and say no fear. There's another condition called anaphobia, the absence of fear. Well, you should have fear. There's another one called counterphobia. Counterphobia is fascinating. It's when you're afraid of something and you want to do it, like jumping out of an airplane. You know, you just feel like you've got to do it. And the way you overcome it is you get over it. But didn't we just have a caller? Yes, we do. He's ringing.
I'd love to jump out of an airplane. That always seemed so exciting to me.
Right, because it feels like on the way down you're going to have a great rush.
Exactly. Just the feeling of speeding through the air, seeing the ground get closer and closer, it just seems like such a thrill.
Because on some level, Ben, you love anything that wakes you up.
I do.
You know what I mean?
True, yeah.
It wakes you up. It's a spark of life. It just, boom, it pulls you up. All right.
But is that thrill fear? Is that thrill like set in fear, or is that just thrill of... the wind moving really fast and you seeing beautiful things?
It has to trigger a fear reaction for it to be worth what he's talking
thrilling,
about.
I think,
right.
Yeah, there's an adrenaline component which also can come from fear. So,
yeah.
Right.
I mean, I know that there have been times where I've been afraid, but I got so amped up from the adrenaline that...
Right, it kind of
yeah
turns into something else.
Well, there's a big question. What does that say?
Let's see. It looks like an article about love, lust, and other stuff.
Yeah, and what does it say? Why is kink so freaking sexy? And this talks about the element of fear in sex, mm-hmm. that somehow fear and sex go together. Can you put that together?
In a way, I mean, the 50 Shades of Grey book got so popular, and
so there's a whole bunch of stuff.
It kind of created like this cultural
acceptance of the BDSM type.
Absolutely.
So if you don't have fear in a relationship, is there anything to hold the relationship together?
Well, I think that a lot of people in their relationships do what they do out of fear. Like, how many times have you heard, I've heard personally so many times a guy say something like, oh, my wife's going to kill me.
Right.
You know, my girlfriend's going to kill me.
If she finds out.
For relatively trivial things.
So that's one element of fear. How about the fear of your mate leaving you?
Of course, that's a huge one.
The biggest
that can push people to marrying somebody. They're afraid that they're going to leave, so they'll actually propose to them. Even
it pushes people to have babies.
To have babies, right?
Yeah, it pushes people to have babies.
Yeah, my cousin in Taiwan, actually, there's a really big pressure, familial wise, to find a husband and have a child before you're too old to be desirable.
30, right?
Right, yeah. 30 years old is basically
It's a male or female cousin?
Female.
No, so probably even younger than 30.
Yeah, she's 27 right now. And that's almost too old already. So she needs to get a husband, have a baby, and then she can move on with her life. And there's a really huge fear kind of looming over her.
That's right.
That whole time.
212-957-2729. We're talking about fear. Let's say hello to Terry. Hi, Terry. You're on the air.
Hey, what an interesting conversation you guys are having.
We picked it just for you, Terry.
It just goes in so many different directions. When I originally called, I was actually thinking of, when you're mentioning fear, how many times I'm listening to people, and even like on this radio, on WBAI, Gary Null talking about, you know, you have to store food for the future and mm-hmm. things are going to happen. And I can't tell you how many people are like preparing for like some awful cataclysm that's going to, you know. So I think there's a lot more people than we suspect that live in fear. But
well, what about you?
Relationships, that was very fascinating.
Well, what about with you?
I don't know.
Now,
that's a good question. Does the fear keep people together, or does it push them apart? That's very interesting to think.
Well, how about you in your life now? No, are you storing foods for the future?
I did for a while, but I gave up because it's just, I don't know. After a while, nothing happens, right?
The food goes
you
bad.
Can't keep doing it, and nothing happens. So then I say, well, you know, because it does sound like it makes logical sense that you have Plan B, like an insurance. People buy insurance. Insurance is fear, in a sense, right?
Well, okay, so let's talk about Gary Null. Right? Gary Null is a man who's very cautious. He's very concerned about the elements. He's concerned about the purity of everything. He wants stuff to be the way he wants it to be. Therefore, he doesn't want things to be the way he doesn't want it to be. Therefore, he lives his life accordingly, and that's his choice. That would require a little more control than most people would exercise. Like, he would control his water, he would control his air, he would control everything he eats. And most people don't do that. Is Gary wrong for being that way? No, that's the way Gary is. Is Gary wrong for teaching that way? Well, the people who want to hear that will learn that way, and it may benefit them. Does it take frightened people and scare them more? Not much. So is no harm done. So
that's true, but I mean,
I mean, do I scare you with your mind?
No, I don't think you scare anybody, Armand.
That's what's the matter with me. I always wanted to scare everybody.
But I just think, well, that's a good question. Are people that are controlling, like, and I don't mean to use Gary, I just kind of used him as an example.
Yeah, no, I think
really,
it's a good example.
Maybe not the best example, but are people who are controlling, or is that out of fear?
Okay, so is control a fear element? Sure. I like to control things. I love to control things. I love to control the radio show. I love to control my office. I love to control my traveling. I love being in control. But I'm also not afraid to not be. So there's where That's where you got to kind of set the line. If you're afraid of not being in control, that adds a certain tension to your life and takes away from the quality of it. Now, let's talk about you in relationships.
Oh, gosh, you don't want to hear about that.
did I hit the right note? 6 years ago, what happened to you with love?
6 years ago?
6 years ago.
I don't know. You know, my relationships have never really been, I mean, my first husband, my husband, the person that I had a child with, he was very abusive, right? So then I moved on to someone who was very easygoing and easy to get along with, and there was absolutely no fear with him, right? And that really didn't work out. 6 years ago, actually, that kind of ended. And
right.
I met someone who actually was a psychologist.
Let's go back to that 6 years ago. 6 years ago, you were with somebody who was a limp. He was kind of like there was no edge. You know, that's what happened 6 years ago. And instead you turned over and you met an Armand. You met a therapist. You met somebody who put an edge back into your life.
Sort of, but yet he was more like a best friend than anything else.
Okay, now how did that add to you?
It's a good question. I don't know. I think that in some ways he added because I realized I found something that, you know, I want that I didn't know I would want before, right? Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, you know, to be honest, between the two of us, I thought he was a little wackier than most of the people I had ever
sure.
met before.
So there was an edge. So therefore you had to be a little afraid.
But it was maybe too much of an edge. He was really looking, actually it's kind of interesting because he was really looking for drama in relationships, right? And I guess I was at a point where I really don't want drama in my life.
But you just ended a non-drama relationship. 6 years ago you said goodbye to the non-drama guy. You were bored with it too.
Yeah, I guess somewhere along the line, you have to find, for me, I have to find somebody that, it's not a drama when it comes to the connection and the relationship, but yet there's some type of adventure when it comes to, you know, the things you do, like jumping out of a plane or skiing or, you know, like there should be some excitement in the things that I do. I don't know if that makes sense what I'm saying.
It makes a lot of sense, Terry. What you're saying is, you are trying to find a balance between your excitement and your calm. You're trying to find a place inside you where you know you could be at peace, yet stay charged. You don't want to be too placid. You don't want to be too quiet. You don't want to be too soft. You don't want to be too nervous. You're looking for a partner that excites you. And that's hard to find.
Yeah, and as you get older, it's even harder.
Yeah. You know, I hear that from so many men as well. The men write to me all the time asking me, where is Terry?
Start a singles group, Armand.
You know, I wish I could. Terry, send me an email. I got a guy who's asking me now. I don't know how we're going to do it. We're going to put some kind of a singles group together or something to get a bunch of people who want to meet each other, who are decent, exciting folks. Send me an email. Just say, hey, let me know when you're having a party.
I'll definitely do that. Thank you so much. But
okay.
I just, when you started talking about fear, I just kept thinking of that Y2K moment, right?
Well, what about it? Go there.
Yeah, we were all storing water, right, and food, because there was going to be a computer glitch that changed the whole world, right? I don't know if you remember that.
Sure I do. I was here. I was here. It was amazing. There are so many fears that I watch now. The difference, Ben asks me, Ben is 27, and I'm my age, and Ben says to me, well, what's the difference? See, Ben doesn't feel fear. I don't feel fear because I feel like there's a, what could you do to me?
Well, I don't know. Ben gave a pretty good example. He likes skydiving, right? But
yeah,
I think
he didn't say
you,
he likes skydiving. You would
as,
like to
as
skydive.
As you grow older, does that change, that drive or that fear, does it change? Because the brain changes, right, as you grow older.
That's a good point. It's a good point.
So anyway, thank you so much.
Let me ask you one more thing. Oop. As a woman, what do you fear specifically related to your gender?
As a woman, really, In what way? I'm not sure.
As a woman, is there things that women should fear that men don't have to fear? Ben and I were having a discussion about this, and Julian and I were talking about this. Do you think that there are things that are specific to women that women should fear that men don't have to fear?
I think there's a lot of things women have to fear, simply because we are women. And so just being a woman, people see you as a little bit more vulnerable, right? And so depending on the situation and where you are and the type of people that you're surrounded by, I guess a man maybe wouldn't have as much fear of being attacked or, you know, when they go home and close the doors, someone coming in. You know, men, I don't think, have those fears. Women have them somewhat. I've known women who, not myself, but I've known women who have either been attacked or maybe they went out and met people and someone put something in their drink, right? So crazy things happen to women that I don't think men think twice about.
That's right.
But when they get older, I think men start having those fears because when you're old, you become vulnerable.
You become more fragile.
Yes.
As you get older, that's one. Also, size makes a difference. The bigger you are, I'm big. I'm as big as an ox. So it's like, you know, things bounce off me, which is one way. But when you're more frail, when I was thinner and much thinner, I can remember feeling more vulnerable. So size makes a difference. Your gender makes a difference. It's all about strength or weakness. If you feel like you're a weaker end of the pole, you're a little more afraid because you have to be cautious. The rule in life, eat and don't get eaten. Right? Get out there, get what you've got to get, but be careful because if you're weak or you look weak, somebody's going to try to gobble you up.
That's scary.
But what the hell? We can afford it, can't we?
I don't know. It's pretty depends on the situation, I suppose.
Terry, you're a beautiful human being. Send me an email.
Thanks, you.
Thanks for calling in. Yes.
Yeah, it's interesting that Terry brings up Y2K because that was a big one. And then most recently, the whole 2012 phenomenon.
Right, you know, the apocalypse is coming.
Yeah,
there was tons of movies coming out.
Two, three-year lead-up where it was all over the internet. People were making videos about what's going to happen on December 21st, 2012. I mean, it was Y2K 13 years later.
So, Ben, I mean, don't you think that we invent fear to have fear and then the fear regenerates itself? Look at what's happening now with ISIS.
Absolutely.
You know, it's all like we're afraid of you, you're afraid of us, we're afraid of you. As long as we keep the fear going, we put down the wall with Russia, you know, and now we don't have Russia to fear. Now we have to fear Russia again.
Sure. I mean, when I think of the societal fears, like you said, it's ISIS or it's some kind of, you know, World War III scenario or a dollar crash is a one that I hear a lot of people talking about.
No one is a dollar crash.
Yeah, currency collapse and then what, you know, the fallout from that. So I think that in a way, as a group, as a collective society, we almost have an obsession with fear.
Okay, so if you didn't fear and you just relaxed, you could get too sloppy. You could not save money for your kid's dinner.
Yeah.
Right? So there's something in the middle. If only it could be done with a more gentle way of being cautious.
Rather than afraid.
Which is such a primal kind of thing. And you can go around and off the edge and just not even think about it.
That's why you don't want to get married yet. Right. 21 years old. You don't have to be concerned yet. Jeremiah.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hey, good to hear you, Jeremiah.
How are you?
Good.
Hey, you know, you do a great show. I listen to you whenever I get the opportunity. And today's a good show. I know that others aren't good, but I hear you talking about fear and trust.
And is it possible, Jeremiah, could you take me off your speakerphone?
Sure, one moment.
Sure.
Learn how to use this new technology here.
Yeah, I'm learning too.
Yeah. One second. Okay. All right, here we are.
Oh, yes. Perfect.
Good. So we were talking about trust and fear.
Yeah, and where do you stand with it? Do you fear anything?
Well, life in itself.
What do you mean you fear life?
Because when you think about fear comes in twofold. You know, just living is fearful.
Okay, now wait, Jeremiah, let me do a thing with you, okay?
Go ahead.
I want you to personalize it. So instead of talking about it as a general thing, say, being alive, I feel frightened. Use the I word as much as you can.
Well, Well, I'm not going to say being alive, I feel frightened.
That's oh, you what, don't? Okay.
I don't really.
Okay, that's what I'm talking about. So what does Jeremiah fear?
There aren't any specific things that I'm going to say to myself that I'm fearful of that. Because
okay, you don't have anything that you're afraid of?
Excuse me?
You don't have anything you're afraid of?
Not anything that I can think of right now.
Okay, stop for a minute.
Okay.
Think for a minute.
Go ahead.
Think for a minute of something that frightens you right now.
Well,
give it okay. a minute. Give it just a minute.
Okay.
30 seconds.
Sure.
If I were Jeremiah,
uh-huh.
I would be afraid. What would come after that?
Well, I would be afraid of, like you said, World War III.
Yeah, okay, the big external event. Uh-huh.
I'm not afraid of death.
When did you lose your fear of death?
Well, I used to be in the Marine Corps. There was never any time where I lose my fear of death because I know that as long as I'm alive, I will die sometime. So what I do is learn how to live without putting fear in my living.
Mm-hmm. I understand. What do you think death is like, Jeremiah?
I don't know. I've never died.
I know. But what do you
think? I've never died spiritually. Neither have I died physically.
What do you think it's like?
I don't want to think about that right now.
Okay, wait a minute.
That will take its course. I don't want to think about that at this
point. Okay, so here's what you're saying to me.
Uh-huh.
You are reluctant to think about death.
Right.
So you have a thanatophobic reaction. This means...
I have what?
Thanatophobic, which means I don't want to think about death.
Uh-huh.
Because if I think about it, it brings it closer.
Exactly.
All right. That's a fear.
It is a fear, yes. But listen to this for a minute. It becomes a fear when you put that into your subconscious mind. That can cripple you.
Oh, really?
Because when you begin to think about death, you say, oh, my God, if I leave my house, I'm going to get hit by a car. Or you step outside your door, something fell off the roof and drop off your head. A bullet can get
you
anywhere.
So you think you make it happen by thinking it?
Yes, exactly.
Oh, my gosh.
So what I'm saying to you...
I want to hire you.
I don't worry about
I want you
things.
To work for me.
Huh?
I want to get you a whole bunch of things to imagine so you can make them happen. You're a magical man.
It's not that I'm a magical man. It's just so I think. Because as we agree that if I continue to sit here and think about death, death will wrap me in my house and my house will consume me. I would never leave my house. And
God
then
bless you.
Something will happen in the house and that will cause my death. So for me now, to broaden my scope, is to think not in that box where I'm going to box myself in where death is concerned. Death is going to consume me at some point because here's how I plan. I plan to live to be 110 minus a day.
It's a good plan, and it's probably going to happen.
It will happen because I'm programming that to God to help me to get there.
Jeremiah, I thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you so much
for
listening.
I have to get going, sure.
Thank you so much.
Sure. So there's a belief. Now, Ben, that's really important. If I think it, then it could happen.
Well, I totally understand where he's coming from, because if you get into that sort of mentality of, you know, that I can sort of manifest it through my thoughts, then Jeremiah's right. You never leave the house because you could walk outside and get struck by lightning. So I understand the impulse to...
not want to think about it.
To just not want to think about it, sure.
And I think about death all the time. Nothing wrong with it.
There's nothing wrong with it.
I mean, I think about birth.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with it. I just understand where he's coming from. I understand his decision to say,
so
hey, you know, I'm just not going to even think about it.
I wonder how many people live in fear of their thoughts. We'll have to address that when we get back from our break. This is Armand DeMille with Julian Gianju, Julian Gioiello, Ben Starr. We'll be back with you in just a couple of minutes, friends.
And that's Dmitri Shostakovich with the first movement from Bach's Fugue, Opus 87, Number 7, Concerto Number 1, BWV 1046. Here on WBAI, you're listening to The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille. Today we're talking about fear or no fear and the boundary between caution and trust.
You know, one of the things that we fear the most is being seen. Part of what we have convinced ourselves to do is to not be perceived. So what's happened with the hikikomoris?
Hikikomori. We talked about this yesterday. It's the
right hikikomori, which is the
sort of phenomenon in Japan and all over the world of people that never leave their house.
And they just stay invisible. And the way they stay invisible is they are not seen. They're not seen because they now have relationships with the media. Right? We're now watching a TV and we're now watching computers. We have blow-up girlfriends. And we can live that way. Right?
Yeah.
This is nobody sees me. If nobody sees me, then I can't be hurt. How many people are living in our audience who are never seen? Who choose never to be seen. Just let me disappear. Just make believe you don't see me. Just treat me as invisible. You know, that's it. I don't even want to be seen. I don't want to be dealt with anymore. I don't want to deal with you anymore. So many people are living that way now. The fear of being seen takes over by trying to command some kind of invisibility. Think about the way people dress. Some people dress to be not seen. You know, some people dress to be not obvious, not to be no colors, no anything. I remember one man I spoke to from Asia who said to me from the Far East, he said, oh, you still wear colorful shirts. As if, oh, that's a thing that some people still do. You know, because we don't wear colorful shirts. We wear just white or gray or tan.
It just, it's interesting in New York, actually, black is really popular.
Yeah.
What does that really represent? Like black is like the color you wear in New York.
Right. If you're wearing black jeans and a black leather jacket and some black boots, you know, you're
fitting right in here.
You're fitting right in here.
Yeah.
Because you're kind of invisible.
You blend into the blackness of the city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's all the same. 212-957-2729. Youssef is back with us. Hi there. It's Armand DeMille.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good. Nice to hear from you.
Thank you. Good for God. I want to have I have two definitions for fear, and they're personal. Here's how I look at fear. When we express fear, to me, it's kind of...
Are you on your speakerphone?
No, I'm not.
Okay, I hear a background noise.
No, I'm not.
Okay, thank you.
So what I was saying is, when you express fear, to me, it should be a source of energy or power. I'm going to explain myself. I remember when I was in my teen, jumping a wall that is over, if I convert it to 3 meters, so I would say about 25 feet. And the second time, so I did, it had to do with jumping too. And I jumped on a roof that would be probably more than 25 feet. And this, if you ask me, how did I do it? You have to do it again, I won't be able to do it. But I did it out of fear. The first one was I was chased by a dog, and I jumped this wall that nobody thought I could do it. I mean, I came back and looked at the wall and tried it, I couldn't jump. And the second one, jumping on the roof, was the house was caught on fire. So out of fear to see all this house, the fire would leave from this house to other house, I jumped on this fire and started to stop the fire. At the same time, I would say resisting fear could be a sort of caution. I mean, it gives you more energy.
It gives you more energy.
Yes.
Everybody, Youssef. Yes. See, other people would be crippled by the same situation. So one of the things you're saying is that for Youssef, you kind of run a slow speed. And if you get something that activates you, it makes you speed up and you overperform. And other people, they live on too fast a speed. So when they feel that happen, when they get overexcited, right? They de-perform. Everybody is different.
Right.
And that's what we have to understand about each other, that everybody's fear level is different. Now, see, you work better with a firecracker behind you. So who did you marry?
My wife, I don't know. My wife is very fearful. I know. Yeah, I mean, right. she's a very... it's a word I said a couple of times to a point where I said, I feel like it's disrespectful. Because I always tell my wife, like, look, I'm so fear of that. If I'm not here one day, you'll be able to defend my kid. You know?
Sure.
She's always fearful. But I'm on the second side of fear. I'm talking, I was
Now look at what her self-fear does for you. What does her fear, how does her fear keep you awake?
Because it makes me, like, especially when it comes to my kids, I feel like she won't be able to stand up for them. So I have to be there all the time to make sure things will not go wrong for her and for my kids.
Right.
You know. But
so that's how you keep yourself jumping on the wall. You see, Yusef, so you keep yourself with your kid and with your wife, you keep yourself frightened from the outside in.
I don't think I keep myself fear, but I think when it comes, the way I react to it is what is at stake here.
Absolutely. You know,
right. Like the example I would give is when I was in high school, right? It was right after September 11th. That's in Togo, West Africa. So something happened above us, and there was people were running out of the classroom. But the way it sounds like the whole building was coming down. So the sound was so heavy, and everybody starts running out of the class. But I stood up there and stand. I didn't move. And by the time I came out, there's a lot of broken bones. It was one person that died that day.
Wow.
And when I came out, later on after 10 minutes, we realized that it was somebody that had some crisis in their class. And infants in the class, and people were running, and everybody starts running. So I didn't move. I just stood there because I want to see what where the danger is coming from before I know which way to go.
Okay, Yusef, so you froze, but you also froze, evaluated, and then performed.
I don't think I froze, Armand. No, I don't think so. What I thought is, there's one movie that taught me this long time ago. It was one movie called Django. Django,
oh, yeah.
It was when the assassins or cowboys came in the village. When people heard that the assassins came in the village, everybody started running, not looking at or not finding out where the danger was coming from. And
if you would, stop for a moment, Yusef, before you get into more detail, because we're running a little out of time.
Mm-hmm.
I want people to hear what it was like for Yusef to be in Africa at a time of crisis like this. We have real fear takes over an entire village, and you live in a kind of a panic. It's a horrible, horrible way to live.
It is.
And the question that Ben asks is, do we still need that kind of fear, being here where we are now?
No, we don't.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you, Armand, for a good show.
You're a beautiful guy. Imagine. So there's real fear. Which is, it's coming to get you. Run away. Get out of the way. And then there's all of these cautions that we have. Now we have this world where we have the internet and we have the machines. We could virtually protect ourselves everywhere. Right? You could tell when the oil is getting low in your house. You're fully protected.
Right. Even the hikikomori in Paris when the attack was happening, they weren't outside. They were at their desk in the computer. They could be on that block, and it's even like they're just watching, but they're not part of it.
212-957-2729. So is there anything to really be afraid of in love? And I bet that if you didn't have fear, you couldn't have love.
Why do you say that?
Because you need an edge. You get too comfortable, you become like partners. You become nice. You become sweet. But when the edge goes, something about the connection goes.
And what do you mean by the edge?
The edge is like, I'm afraid of you leaving or you're afraid of me leaving. That's the edge. Somebody's got to be saying, let's keep the gate closed.
So then the two people you think are doing more for each other to keep each other around? Is
exactly.
that what you're saying?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's mutual. Let's say hello to Jade.
Hi.
Hi, Jade. Again, nice to hear
again.
From you.
Again, yes, thank you. It's a good topic, so I'm glad I tuned in again today. When the program started, I guess you all were asking about the necessity of fear, and you were asking, and I'm sorry, I forget your co-host name.
Ben and Julian.
Ben and Julian. Because they were cautioning people about being afraid, and you asked them to pause and think through what they got out of the caution, and you were asking them their experience with that. So I experienced that. I mean, I see myself as a very independent person, and I wasn't afraid. It wasn't something that I, you know, felt like I had prior to being attacked in public. Now that I've been attacked, I'm very afraid, you know, of lots of things. And like we talked yesterday, have a difficult time, you know, processing that and getting
sure.
into that cycle. But the caller who just hung up when he was talking about being in a fearful community in the type of way that people responded, I was in a situation where in that community when I first moved in, I didn't understand that that was the dynamic. But after being there for a while, that's what it was. There was a group of people who sort of thrived on making other people afraid. And if I told you the name and you Googled it, you would see that they have very high incidence of bullying in the schools and public places, lots of suicides, and the police.
Oh, wait, Jade, we did this yesterday. What's the point today?
Oh, well, I was just commenting on the usefulness of fear. And to some extent, I mean, I guess it serves a purpose. It makes you cautious of things that maybe you need to be more cautious of, but I do recognize that there's a point at which you go overboard.
Yeah, and you've seen yourself go over that point, just as I'm sure we've all seen ourselves go over that point.
Mm-hmm.
At times, you know what really, and also what's interesting is your chemistry so affects how far overboard you go.
Mm-hmm.
Drink three cups of coffee in the morning and watch your fear levels go. Whole big difference. I thank you once again.
Yeah, I've given up caffeine.
I thank you once again for joining us, Jade.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
212-957-2729. How do you see your chemistry?
Yeah, I was about to say, I mean, I drink coffee like every morning now, and I've always been a somewhat nervous kind of person, not like out of control, but nervous. And when I drink coffee, I mean, there's certain times when I have like a large one in the morning that's a little bit strong, and I'll find myself constantly you know, jumping around and more alert, but almost like too alert about certain things and like over alert about
the jitters,
a car driving by or something like this.
Well, you know, on one hand, there's a reason to do that. The reason to do it is it takes the nervousness that would be coming and it brings the nervousness up right now, and then you burn through it and then it's over. So coffee as a stimulant, of course, is not the healthiest thing in the world for you. Or alcohol as a relaxant is not the best thing for you. But what you're doing is basically chemistry control. I want to control my own fear. And that's what people are doing. I'm going to keep my fear at my own level. Hey, we've got Isabel on the line. Isabel.
Hi, Armand. How are you?
Isabel.
Hello.
Hello, Isabel. Do you know where the name Isabel comes from? Wait, hold on a second. We've got a moment of discovery here. Do you know, Julian, I'm talking to my cousin, that you have an Isabel in your life?
Isabel.
That's my sister's
yes,
name.
It is. I knew that.
That was her original
I
name.
I almost forgot. Thank you.
Right. You call her Belle.
Yes, I do call her Belle.
Good. Now Isabel's calling. Hello, Isabel.
Hello. I get called Belle, too. I'm Bella.
Uh-huh.
I was just listening to the point that you said regarding there sort of needing to be an element of fear in order for love.
Yeah, what about that?
I mean, is that really love?
I don't know. Is love really love? Is like fear really fear? Now, I'm not trying to be too esoteric here. Well, listen to this for a moment, you know? Think about love of the nice, easy, soft, gentle kind. You've had that in your life?
Yes.
might have sweet, romantic, pleasant. Have you had love that was exciting and dangerous?
No.
How come?
You
never took a risk?
Probably my question.
Okay, so there it is.
Yeah.
So there are two kinds we know of. One is a cautious love and one is a non-cautious love. What are you afraid of?
Well, I guess my point is that I think how we define love is, you know, whether I just think love and fear can't come together.
Uh-huh.
So I think, you know, in terms of what we call love many times is just sort of a caring and a convenience and, you know, needs being met.
All right, so here's a question that Isabel asks for the Internet. We're going to take an Internet survey, or is it going to be a Twitter? Internet survey. How many people believe that love requires fear? Is that the question? That there's an element of fear in love. That is love, would you say love should be absent, zero fear in love?
I think they're truly mutually exclusive if it's truly love.
Wow. So you have truly love in your life?
Not sure.
Yeah, right.
I have loving people around me, but I can't say that.
And what about romance?
Not so much anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
So what happened
with... I don't think romance is love.
You don't think romance is love either?
No, it's a cooing. It's a, you know, it's a game. It's a fun game to play.
But Isabel, what's missing? Tell me what's missing. Fire?
Fire's missing a little,
that's
yes,
right.
Sure.
Yeah, no, you know what happens when you put your hands over a fire? You get burned.
Yeah.
Getting burned is nice. Avoiding the fire, you know, is what a lot of people do.
Yeah.
They avoid the fire and they stay toasty off on the sides. Other people, they reach into the fire just to touch the flames. So the question is, how do you want to live? Sounds to me like Isabel wants to touch the flames, but she's afraid to.
Probably a little bit.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. A lot of people like that. They all know it's over there, you know. They all know they want to reach out for it. They want to singe it. They want to just feel it a little bit. They want to feel that spark, that life. But they know where safety is, and so they hang out in the safe zone. See, the idea of fear is that fear keeps you where you are. That's the rule of fear. You stay where you are. If you have fear, you stay where you are. If you don't have fear, you tend to move. And everybody would love a little change. Sounds to me like you would love some change, too.
Yeah, it's all up to me.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you just said.
I said I understand, and it's all up to me. It's true.
What do you mean, all up to you?
I'm changing.
Yeah, do you feel yourself changing?
You
got to watch out, because you're the kind of person who could slide into silence.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And I don't want
really
that to
well.
Happen. Yeah, I don't want that to happen. You know what I need from you? Within a month, WBAI is going to make its special offer where we do a one-time consultation at a reduced fee. I want to get to see you one time to see where that spark is. We're not offering it yet, but when we do, this money will go to the station. Swing by our studio. Say hello to us.
Okay, Armand, thank you so much.
Isabel, nice to speak with you. Nice to use that name. I missed it when my sister changed her name. She changed it to Belle, 25 years ago, and I miss her name. Isabel, nice name. Armand and Isabel, we were known as. Good. Bring it back.
Thank you. Have a beautiful day.
You too.
I have a cousin named Isabel.
You do?
Yeah, my mom's side.
We have family in here now. 212-957-2729. So should you trust everybody? Sure, if they can't hurt you, and if they could hurt you, what are they going to do to you? Are you afraid of yourself? Are you afraid of where you would slide? That becomes a question. Are you afraid that you're going to slide into some kind of place where people are going to take advantage of you? Well, they could do it to you once.
Well, about the notion of fear and love, I mean, my biggest fear and fears are all related to people that I love.
Yeah.
So I think that there is a mixture that happens there.
Seems it might have to be there. Hey, let's say hello to Mike before we go. Mike, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Hi, Armand. This is Mike, and thank you for taking my call. And, yeah, I do have fears that come up, but it's gotten much better. I want to thank you for many, many years ago. I was actually a doorman in your building.
You know? Mike.
Yeah, big Mike, big tall Mike.
Which building, 77th or here?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Mike!
Yes, sir.
You and, beautiful man.
Since then, I left the transit. I left that. I went to the transit authority, and I retired, so.
Oh, my gosh, almighty, yeah. What a wonderful memory.
Oh, fantastic.
How many years ago was that, Mike?
It's close to 30 years ago.
Beautiful man. Beautiful man. I felt like a major guardian
too.
Had left. Yeah.
I listen to your show occasionally, and, you know, you help so many people. I'm very grateful. And I'll tell you what, my mother's name was Isabel.
How do you like that? Look at where we're going here.
Isabel Hayes.
So let's say hello to your mother.
Yeah, she passed.
I know. Let's say hello to her right now. If you were to say something to Isabel Hayes, Mike, through these airways right now.
Thank you.
Say something to her directly.
Want to say, Mom, it's, you know, you really did the best that you could with me. And, you know, I always love you. I always love you. You know, I never had any bad thing to think about you. So, love is always there. That's what I can say.
Right into the ethers, Mike.
Thanks.
Isn't it amazing that we go through 77th Street, through the airwaves, 30 years ago, down right here to WBAI, right out to the ethers. You're beautiful. Mike, I got to get to see you again one day. If you're ever around my office, I'd love you to stop by.
Sure, things are getting better and better, and I have to say that it's a miracle that I reached you on the phone.
Beautiful, beautiful. Yep. Anytime.
Thank you so much.
Okay, Mike.
And you have a lovely day.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Big Mike. He was as big as I was.
We were just talking the other day about, I was asking you if you'd ever gotten calls from people that you knew from way back when.
Right, here it is right there.
Amazing, yeah.
We had a caller that knew me.
Right. We have to be going, my friends. Unfortunately, we'll be back with you next Tuesday at 1 p.m. with more of this exciting radio. Ben Starr, Julian Joiello, Armand DeMille, The Positive Mind in Expandedness.
Such a pleasure. Thank you.